Ah, it's great to be here. My name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul!
I'm a member of the East Naples Men's Group.
Dilly Dilly.
And my sobriety date is April 17th, 1985. Wow. And found it necessary to take a drink since then, even when I wanted to. And man, I wanted to. But my last relapse taught me what I was. I was an alcoholic that belonged in these rooms, hanging out with folks like you. Yeah, Vinny's on Zoom. Yeah. How's the wig look, Vin? Now, I'm really grateful that Jimmy thought to ask me to come speak and to fill in for Karen, who has been a wonderful gift to Broward County AA since she came here. Lady knows the book, knows how to tell a story, and can keep your attention. So come back next week and you'll have a really good speaker. I had my first drink when I was 13 years old. I lived in Miami Shores at the time. My brother was a printer for People's Gas, and I used to go to work with him on Saturdays. They used to do their own printing and stuff, and they had a dark room. And in the dark room, it was covered with Playboy foldouts. So I used to go down and go hang out in the dark room quite a bit. So one day, he's giving a guy a ride home. And the guy says to my brother, he says, "Hey, you want to get some beer?" And my brother says, "Oh, yeah, yeah." My brother was a pretty good drinker. So we pull into 7-Eleven or something. And they buy a couple of six packs of Colt 45 malt liquor. And they give me a couple of cans. And man, I don't like the taste, but I really like the feeling. And I chased that feeling until I had my last drink when I was 33. I used to cut grass on hot-ass days like this to make $5. I'm looking in the liquor ads in the Miami Herald at 13 years old to see what the price of Bacardi is, $3.09 a fifth. I'm cutting grass to make $5. And if you look at these hands, highly opposed to manual labor. But I will cut grass for that bottle of Bacardi. And I'm looking at those ads, because I don't want to have to cut two lawns. But I will. So I'd get the $5, I'd go to my, drop the money off of my brother's job, and he'd buy, my friends and I fit the Bacardi, and we'd go over to his apartment. He lived over by North Miami General. And we would drink and then walk down the railroad tracks to a place called The World. It was a teenage nightclub where I got to see the Young Rascals, and a lot of performers used to come there. Wayne Cochran was a highlighter there. And so every Wednesday and Friday, I would go get drunk with my buddies and walk down the street. I certainly don't think I have a problem, but I like what alcohol does for me. It takes me away the shyness and the fears, and I can socialize better. And when my alcohol kind of takes off, my consumption, we moved to New Orleans in 1967. My father used to manage a convention center in Miami Beach. So he takes a job in New Orleans at a new convention center. And now I got to start all over, new friends, new school, back to Catholic school, and, full of fear. New friends, how you introduce yourself, that kind of stuff. But because I played sports, I could get in real quick with new friends. And, of course, we're drinking. You only had to be 18 years old to drink in New Orleans. And it was just a draft card, no IDs, no picture IDs. So I started drinking pretty good there. When I cross over the line into let's get the party started, Do I need something to kill the pain that's inside of me? I got married when I was 20. Irish Catholic. Girlfriend gets pregnant. We get married. Irish Catholic. And I come home from work. I was really trying to change my life around. I went back to school. I was going to work at 3 p.m, working in a shipyard. Highly opposed to manual labor. And I come home one Saturday, and my wife at the time says, hey, I don't want to be married anymore. And she takes the kid and she leaves. I took that very personal. I really internalized, what the hell's wrong with me? Here I am, you know, I think I'm saintly now because I'm going back to school and trying to change my lifestyle. And that's when the booze really, I needed that to kill the pain. It's a very important turning point in my life. And I don't realize it till I come here and start reading about why every AA must hit bottom. And, you know, when did I cross over the line? That was my moment. So I would get off work at midnight, and I started hanging out in the bars more. And I'm in the bars every night in New Orleans. And this friend of mine says, hey, Paul, he says, why don't you come work with me? He says, you're here every night. I wanted to kiss him on the lips, man. He says, yeah, come work with me. He says, you got these ridiculous bar tabs. And I said, sure. His name was Marlon. I love Marlon. He was a great guy. And so I go to work my first night behind the bar, 2 o'clock in the morning. You know where I'm in a good class of people. After Hours Club, with all the other places somewhat closing and coming there, all the musicians, all the street performers. Marlon gets in an argument with the boss the next night, he leaves. And now I'm the guy behind the bar, which is, my self-esteem was horrible. And now I'm making good money, getting tips with drugs, drink for free. That's a highlight, you know? And I start to really enjoy that lifestyle. I start playing golf with all the bartenders. Free and easy. Had a new car. Had a Grand Prix. The payments were $96 a month. Towards the end, I couldn't make those payments because where I went from being responsible to like not giving a crap, because that's what drugs and alcohol did to me. Lady used to call me every month. You coming in to make a payment? She's like, what's the excuse this time? I know, you got kidnapped by a band of gypsies. You couldn't get here. You know? Very colorful. So I went from being somewhat responsible to not giving a crap about anything. How I got to my very first AA meeting was I was running this nightclub, and some friends of mine that I liked a lot, Tony and Liz, they bought non-conference approved material from me. And they would pay up front and they would share. Now, how do you not like friends like that, you know? Buying product, paying, and sharing. And I'm going to get the first seed planted into me by this lady, Liz. I like these people. Good tippers, classy individuals, drank like I drank, used like I used. But I heard that Liz went into a home for the nervous. She flipped out. It's a treatment center. She flipped out one night and broke everything in the place, and they took Liz away. And I'm concerned about Liz. And a couple of weeks after she's out of treatment, I run into her at a barbecue. Now, I got one foot in the grave. I'm using every day. I'm running that bar. I would come 2 a.m. full of the guilt and the shame and the remorse of living that lifestyle and not knowing what's wrong with me. And I see Liz at this barbecue. And I'm concerned about Liz. I go over to her and I say, Liz, how you doing? She says, Paul, I found this program that teaches me I don't have to use drugs and alcohol anymore. I said, damn, Liz, what a drag that must be, huh? Because I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that. I was a daily drinker as she was, but there was a look in her eyes. I'll never forget it. Don't worry, Clarissa, it's going to get better. Come on, deep breath. It was a look in her eyes, I'll never forget it. And then when I read the big book, and you hear about how Ebby goes to find Bill Wilson, Ebby's one of Bill's buddies, and Ebby's not drinking, Bill's drinking, and Ebby comes to seek out Bill Wilson. And Bill says, Ebby, what's going on with you? He says, oh, I got religion. Now, that turns Bill off completely, but he gets a thought, well, he ain't drinking. I can drink at all now. But he talks about the look that when it was in Ebby's eyes. And when I read that, I immediately thought what Liz did for me. I saw it. She wasn't drinking. I believed it. I didn't know what she had, but I'm going to find out in a couple of weeks who's going to take me to my first meeting in a place called the Camel Club in Gretna, Louisiana, which I think is a very odd name for a club room. I said, Tony, what's with the name of this place? He says, well, Paul, a camel is a animal that wakes up on its knees, goes to sleep on its knees, and most importantly, you can go for 24 hours without a drink. And I thought, wow, that's some worthless knowledge I'll never use. He says to me, you're not going to understand this. He kept saying that to me the whole night. You're not going to understand this. I think I'm a pretty smart guy, you know? He's right. I didn't understand it, but I understand it today. Wake up on your knees, go to bed on your knees, and that's our goal today. Don't drink for today. 24 hours without a drink. If we can count to one, we're in pretty good shape. And that's our goal. Just another 4 hours. Another 3 hours, we'll have another day. No matter what's going on in your life, just get through that. So I go into the meeting, looking at all the steps, working them all right there. Yes, I'm Catholic. I know what that means. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're talking about God. Restitution. Nope, can't do that. Confession. Yeah, I've been doing that since I'm a kid. Not an honest one. And 30 seconds, I'm in a room. I've got all 12 done. Picking and choosing. When I first go into the room, I'm struck with contempt prior to investigation. There's a bunch of people sitting around a coffee bar. All people I have kicked out of that nightclub. Bad drunks, lousy tippers. And that's all I can identify, because my soul is dead. All I know about people I hung around with was fixing my outsides through drinking with me or being good tippers. That's what my life had become. Just a dead soul. So I'd say to Tony once again, what's with all these people here? He says, don't worry about who's here, Paul. He says, what you're here for is to learn how to stay away from one drink for one day. I certainly didn't understand that. He says, that's what you're here for tonight. And I don't stay. Make a horrible mistake. Go back to the bar, tell everybody I joined AA. That was a bad mistake. Make everybody throw their drugs away. Because a week, 2 weeks later, I got my head down on the bar. I'll never forget. It's about 40, 45 years ago. I hear this guy yell out, hey, I see that AA shit really works. So look, if you're going to come here, you got to be in AA before you start telling people you're in AA. Because we can run people out with that.
Yeah.
You better know. You better be convinced before you start telling people. And I don't stay. I ended up on a plane out in New Orleans. Things were bad. This friend of mine, Oswaldo, was coming to collect for some stuff I didn't have. And I decided I would leave town. And I end up on my sister's couch in North Miami. But I know I should go back to those meetings. I run into this priest, Father Jim Bertucci. And I tell him my story, and he says, Paul, you ought to go back to those meetings. They work for guys like you. So Liz gives me a little bit of spiritual awakening. The first meeting awakens my spirit. Father Jim awakens my spirit. And I make a phone call and I end up going to a Wednesday night meeting in North Miami. And the guy that's going to eventually be my first sponsor is there. He's putting out the chairs. He says, hey, does he want to be the chairman? Absolutely. So come help me put the chairs out. So I did. It's an anniversary night. The guy that's speaking's got 6 months. He awakens my spirit because he says, and I hear it, I start taking things from here and putting them in my heart. Not real serious, but I'm open. He says, I got 6 months. He says, I couldn't stop drinking till I started coming to these meetings. The guy's story was nothing like mine. He's an intravenous drug user from New York. Actually, his uncle is my grand sponsor, come to find out. And I pick up a white chip. And it's an anniversary meeting, and there's a guy there that's getting 8 years. Like, come back next week, and you'll see the miracle of what happens when we start picking up medallions. When we start moving ourselves out of the way, and we let the power, the one who has all power, come into our lives. And there's a guy who has 8 years, and he comes over, and he's, well, another one's going to say, you're not going to understand this. But he says to me, you're the most important person here. So this guy's obviously very intelligent. He says, you picked up a white chip. I said, well, you just picked up an eight-year chip. He says, yeah, but he says, look, you just keep coming back here. So that Friday, I go on a cruise, drink the whole cruise, come back to the meeting Wednesday, and the guy that's going to be my sponsor, the chairman guy, he says, hey, did you drink on the cruise? Now, I can't separate the true from the false. I said, absolutely not. I was offended that he would even ask me that. But that's going to deny me many benefits of this program because I don't get clean for that. I don't talk on that for 22 months. And I know the relapse is eventually going to come. And my oldest daughter lives in New Orleans. I was going back there quite a bit. The business I was in, I started doing well in New Orleans in that business. And I would go back and see my friends. And I'm seeing them having a really good time. It appears they're having a good time. They're drinking and partying. And I'm comparing my insides to their outsides. And I'm dying on the inside. And eventually this guy says, hey, you want to do a little drug here? I said, no, it's appropriate. That's in January. So the relapse is coming, but I don't want to be talked out of it. Anybody here thinking about drinking tonight? Anybody? There you go. Thanks for raising your hand, brother. One out of 400 here tonight. Please talk about it before you leave here. Because I tell you, brother, it is so worth it to learn how to tell the truth about the first step. The rest of it comes. You know, you don't become a saint till you get 40 years. But thank you for telling on the disease, because this is a disease that wants to kill us. And it starts with the first step, admitting we are powerless, and that is honesty. And my life was unbearable. That helped me really accept that step. So I know the relapse is coming. I do a line of coke. I buy a half ounce 30 seconds later. I got to be convinced, you know. But I know I've made a grave emotional mistake. I know it. I know where I belong right there. That's where I concede to my innermost self that I belong here. But I don't say to the guy, hey, can I give this back to you? I spend the next 2 days trying to recapture that 30 seconds. Horrible, miserable. I knew where I belonged. So I know I got to go back to the meeting. But, you know, you get that ping pong match, you know? If you need to change your sobriety date, just change your sobriety date. All we want you is be free. Free from the bondage of self. And telling the truth was the freedom from the bondage of self for me. So I missed the plane 2 or 3 days leaving. Hard to believe. But now you see how God's working in my life. I get off the plane in Fort Lauderdale Wednesday morning, and there's a buddy of mine I go to meetings with, and I know that if I see him, I can tell him I've been on a relapse, because I don't really want to go pick up a chip. I know I have to. I've got the ping pong match going on. You got to pick up a chip. You're not. You know you need to. So I'm standing in a line for cabs, and I end up in this guy's cab. And the guy says, hey, where you been? I said, I've been in New Orleans. I've been partying all weekend. He says, oh, I don't drink anymore. Uh-oh. That awakens my spirit. I said, how do you do that? He says, go to AA meetings. And I know I'm in the right cab. Absolutely. God does for me what I can't do for myself. If I don't end up in that guy's cab, you might have a different speaker tonight. But I end up in the guy's cab. And I said, feeling better? I said, man, I've been on a relapse all weekend. He said, well, what do you want to do about it? I said, I'd like to go pick up a chip. So he takes me from the airport. We go to an 11 o'clock meeting on Oakland Park Boulevard. And I picked up my last white chip, April 17th, 1985. So I would ask you tonight, when you say your prayers, try to remember where you were when you got your last white chip and who made it possible for you. It's God's the ultimate one. But who are the people instrumental in you getting here today and staying here? I never ran into Tony and Liz again, but I did have a conversation with Tony one time. Weird conversation. I'm working the helpline here in Broward, and I get a call from a guy. He says, hey, I'm in New Orleans. I'm looking for a meeting. I said, well, you know, you called the Broward helpline, right? He says, yeah, it's the only number I had. So he says, I'm in Gretna, Louisiana. You know where that is? I said, yeah, I might have had a drink or two there. I'm at the Holiday Inn. You know where that is? I said, yeah, I might have come to there once or twice. So I send him to that Camel Club. And I said, look, when you get there, call me. See if there's a couple there, Tony and Liz. And they were there. Liz was in early stages of Alzheimer's. But I talked to Tony. And after Katrina, there was like a massive relapse. And he was back 3 years. And we talked for a little while. So I pick up that last white chip. I don't understand the freedom because I'm still full of guilt and remorse and shame that I felt like I let a lot of people down, people I sponsored, people I worked with. And that's Wednesday. Thursday, I don't remember what I did. Friday, though, I go to a 5:30 meeting, and they say, anybody feel like drinking today? And the first time ever, raised my hand and said, I feel like drinking today. I had to level my pride and let people know what was going on. I felt like drinking. I wanted to run. I felt horrible the way I felt. But the group comes around me, And they say, look, come hang out with us tonight. Paul, you don't have to drink today. Come hang out with us, which I did. And what I learned there also, it made it much easier every time I felt like drinking to tell someone, I feel like drinking today. So I got to let it out. I got to tell on the disease, the sickness that centers in our mind. But if I let you in, I'm halfway through. Because now I can lay it off on somebody else. Because I know, I look around this room, deep down inside of every one of us is a fundamental fact of God. And that's how God talks to me, is through people like you in meetings like this. I didn't get much of this in my early religious years. You know, it was a lot of thous and those and don'ts and do nots. But here I hear people and I see people coming to believe in a power greater than themselves, and they're not drinking a day at a time. I see that. I want that. Because, you know, my life was unbearable. So the group comes around me. I don't drink that night. And I started to make the group of drunks the power greater than myself for that night. And I went back to that meeting pretty regularly because they were doing the deal. They weren't drinking and they were happy. Then I go to the business meeting and I see they're all a bunch of freaking nuts. So I can't make this group the power greater than myself. But I picked up my last white chip in April. Through God's grace, Joe and Charlie are at Palm Air. Kind of teach me about this book. Mother's Day, 1985. And I go to the Big Book seminar. And now I'm going to find out about the other power. I got the power of the fellowship and the power of the meetings, but here's truly the power. That's what this book is about. This is a book written for people like us that's going to introduce us to a power greater than ourselves. I highly recommend you try to get to the Big Book seminar, Mother's Day. It's up in Palm Air. Pat's heavily involved, and it's a great weekend. And they show us what this book is about and how to work, but not only how to work these steps, how to live these steps. And I needed it right at that time. It gave me the program to recover. So I start living the steps. I'm working the steps. I'm getting more involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get on my knees and I say this prayer that I really don't understand. God, offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victor over them may bear witness. For those are the help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Now, when I first saw this prayer the first 100 times, I thought it was more the way I was raised. Too many thys and those and that. So someone said, well, look, why don't you just make up your own prayer? So I did. Show me the way and help me today. Simple, short prayers. But I understand this prayer today. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I'm going to find out what that is when I pick up the pen and start doing a fourth step as it's laid out in the book. That I may better do thy will. The difficulties. It's all right here for us. I'm going to learn about my difficulties. I'm going to learn how powerlessness is. And I'm going to find out on page 63 what the root of my problem is. I am totally selfish and self-centered. I only make decisions based on self. And that still can happen today. So I'm encouraged to do a fourth step, which I do. And I'm going to go share it with a sponsor who's going to tell me what my defects of character are about and how selfish and self-centered I am. And it takes a lot of courage and humility for people like me and people like us to say, look, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I need somebody else's help to get me through this. Once again, leveling the pride, humility. I'm not as great as I think I am, not as bad as I think I am. I'm an alcoholic that belongs in meetings like this, hanging out with people like you, because there's a power in each and every one of us. And that power is God. So I start to get a little bit more involved. Bill Wilson's having a terrible day. And this Jesuit priest is going to show up and is going to tell him about the step that separates the men from the boys. Father Ed Dowling, Bill's having a bad day. Book's not selling. He's got an imaginary gastric attack. And Father Ed shows up. He doesn't know he's Father Ed. And there's a knock on the door, and the guy that's taking care of the room for Bill says, "Hey, Bill, there's an old drunk down here who wants to see you." And Bill doesn't want to see him. He says, "Ah, show him up." Once again, Bill doesn't want to do it, but he does it anyway. You ever get stuff like that in your life? Today? You don't want to take that call? You don't want to go to the extra meeting? You don't want to do a little service? What's Bill do? Do it anyway. And he lets Father Ed up, and Father Ed's there to ask him where Bill got this stuff from. He thinks he stole it from the teachings of St. Ignatius. And Bill, "Who the hell is that?" he says. But that's it. That's where a lot of the teachings came from. But Bill doesn't know it. He writes this stuff divinely inspired, arguing with the first 100 or the first 40, the first 10. They don't like the way he's writing this. And there's many changes made. But Bill sees them anyway. So I'm challenged with that a lot. Just do it anyway. And the way this alky brain works, I say no right away, always come up much better than I can ever expect, because the Lord puts situations and people in my life that teach me how to stay sober, how to recover, how to change my ideas, my actions, my emotions, and my attitude. I'm 40 years sober. 5 o'clock this morning, I'm reading that prayer on page 552 because I got a resentment. And I'm up early. And I'm saying that prayer. I said it at our home group last night. And I got some relief from that. It's in the book. Relieve me. Pray for the other people. Now, you know, when us alkies get resentments, we don't want to pray for. I didn't want to pray for other people. But I have to today if I want to be relieved of the bondage of self. And it comes. It comes. You drive in South Florida? Pretty easy. So Father Ed talks to Bill about the willingness to be free. The sixth step separates the men from the boys. And then we go into the humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Another short, quick prayer, but very powerful. I don't want to give that stuff up some days. But I must in order to recover. So I go on, I start doing the rest of the steps as they come in order, 8 and 9. You know, when I first came, I just said, there's no way I'll ever be able to do that. I owe too much money. But because I had a home group and I had great sponsorship, I was encouraged. Listen, when it comes time, God will take care of that for you. And he absolutely did. I had a surgery one time, and this doctor hit on my girlfriend when we went to the follow-up visit. And I said, "Man, I ain't never paying that dick." But my sponsor brought it to my attention. He said, "Well, hey, what'd the guy do for you? He saved your life." But I don't see that. I take that for granted. So I start sending this guy $25 checks forever. And I made a lot of $25 payments to clear up the records of my past. Now, we try not to add anybody to the list. Not my story. I've had to add to the list because I'm not as well as I appear to be. Ask Thomas, he'll tell you. I do a 10th step every day. 4 questions. What do I like to respect myself for? because I got to see the good. What did I do for somebody else? Because I got to see the good. I got to look for opportunities to go help people, even when I don't want to. And what happened today had nothing to do with me, but made me feel good. Man, I come in this room. This makes me feel good. I don't have a lot to do with you guys' recovery. Some of them I do because I sponsor them. But it certainly makes me feel good. Jimmy asked me a couple of weeks ago, hey, Karen's going to be out of town. Will you share? That made me feel good. What did I do for somebody else? I got a friend of mine, lost her license. I was able to drive her somewhere today to take care of some business. I send out messages every morning. I read part of my 11th step is I read Jesus Calling. I read The Upper Room, a book that with Bob and Ann Smith use in their morning meditation before they had the big book. They use that and they use the Bible. I always read the Daily Reflections and the 24-hour book. But I send those readings out to quite a few people just to maybe open their mind to a power greater than themselves, because we have to seek to improve our conscious contact. I don't do that for them. I hope they get some out of it. I do that for me. That helps me. And every day I start out with those kind of prayers, because I need more. The sponsor I have today, he brought me into that, seeking where the material comes from. The book of James, Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians 13. You having a bad day? You resent somebody? You read that 1 Corinthians 13 and the St. Francis Prayer. If you're going to sponsor people, you should probably read the St. Francis Prayer a lot. I do. Yeah. And then what are we asked to do? We're asked to do this. Come here. Tell you about how I've been able to stay sober for a couple of years in a row. I've had a spiritual awakening. I don't act the same way. I don't hang out in the same places. I go to any lengths I can to carry this message. What's the message? I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, wonderful sponsorship, people like you in meetings like this. I have a home group. I participate in that home group. I do a lot of service in AA. I had a sponsor, his name was Jim Reedy. He died with 62 years of sobriety. He died at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. 10 o'clock the next morning, I had another sponsor, because I know what we deal with here. Cunning, baffling, powerful, patient. This is the disease tells us we don't have a disease. So I don't put that kind of stuff off. But Jim told me about service. He taught me about being kind to the newcomer. So that's what, if you come here Saturday night, I'm one of the first guys you see at the door is me shaking your hand, welcoming you. Because I learned that from a great sponsor. He says, you got to make the new people feel comfortable. We don't want to run them out. This is a program of attraction. We want to set an example that if we live this way of life, beyond your fondest dreams will come true. Think about the last 6 weeks before you get here. How were you doing? I was suicidal. But I find people like you that are going to show me a new way of life. We are the fortunate ones. Amen. We are the fortunate ones. So if you didn't take a drink today, you're a winner. I hope you can get through the rest of today without taking a drink. Come back tomorrow. There'll be another speaker. Thank you very much. All right.